Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
So Ian Wright was in Dublin yesterday. He was over with Cadbury. They're the official snack partner of the Premier League. And Ian Wright was spending the day watching a game with some fans, having a nice afternoon. And he popped in here yesterday morning. So just one quick point on Ian Wright. I'm sure most of you at this stage have seen the video on YouTube, this amazing moment where Ian Wright thinks he's at Highbury to film a piece to camera, and his old school teacher surprises him, a teacher who inspired him and nurtured him when he was growing up. It comes up in the interview, just for those of you who maybe haven't seen that clip on YouTube, here's a little sample.
Ian's still the highest scoring striker ever to play for Arsenal, and he owes a lot to the man who first taught him to kick a ball, his old school teacher, Sid Pigden.
As I haven't seen him for, 23, 24 years, and so he would now be expecting me to be 6 feet under, I would think. I don't actually think, he probably won't recognise because he won't believe it's me. Hello, Ian. Long time no see.
Mr. Pigden. You're alive.
I'm alive, he says. How are you doing?
I can't believe it. Someone said you was dead.
As you see, I'm very much in, and I'm so glad you've done so well with yourself.
I don't know what to say. God, I can't believe it. I can't believe it.
Yeah, wipe tears from eye. One of these extraordinary moments caught on camera. It's over 1.5 million views on YouTube at this stage. So if you hadn't seen it or heard it, it comes up in the interview. So that's a flavour of it. We got limited enough time with him in the end because he's so interesting and a whole host of different things. I didn't quite get in as much football as planned, but he was very interesting all the same on various things. So without further ado, the man who does our favourite Roy Keane impersonation.
Finally!
It's Ian Wright.
Thank you very much.
Do you come over to Dublin much? Are you generally around?
I've got friends. I've got dear friends here. My mates, the Healy's. They're, you know, Crumlin. I normally go to Crumlin with my mate Tony Healy, and we stay all day in the transport cafe place, play pool, and drink Guinness.
Right.
It's one of my favourite things to do when I come here, because everybody thinks you have to go to town and do all that stuff. But I like going to that cafe, and it's the kind of place where, when I was growing up, there was millions of them around.
Mm.
But the only time I can go to somewhere like that is if I come here and go to Crumlin and go to Transport Cafe.
So if someone around the Crumlin area is convinced they might have seen Ian Wright a couple of months ago, it may well have been you.
They would have seen me maybe a couple of years ago. They would have seen me there, because every time I came over, I always go there.
We should start with the big issue of 2018, which is just how brilliant your Roy Keane impression is.
Well, you know, I mean, like I say, he's my dear friend. You know, I mean, people took that. How they took it, but it's fine when it's
not. We didn't take it as a big argument. See, we have big rows on Irish TV. We're maybe a bit more used to it, so we thought it was all just the fun and cut and thrust of it.
It's funny because, like, we spent a lot of time with each other in the World Cup.
Mm.
You know, we had many 2-hour breakfasts, 3-hour lunches, evenings, you know, and it was brilliant. It's fascinating because obviously I was there, Giggsy was there, Gary Neville was there, and we was talking about the old times, the games and everything that was going on. It was being in the World Cup with all the guys was like being back in the dressing room. It was very competitive. Everything was competitive. There's a lot of gym work going on. So he was the fittest. And I must admit, when I looked at the way those men, especially Gary Neville and Giggsy was leading the, we had to do an 8-minute workout with Giggsy, and he was the leader.
Mm.
And honestly, you could see them guys were focused and winners, man. Winners.
Those old habits come out.
Honestly, it was. I thought to myself, and while I'm doing it, I'm thinking to myself, I'm not going to see them. I'm not going to let them see I'm weak right now, even though I'm like 10 years older than them. But it was a fascinating time. It was a brilliant time. And it was quite an eye-opening time, because you literally get a glimpse into that Man United team that was so dominant, the Man United team that I always equate my punditry to when I'm talking about them now, because. Mm. They were so great, and it was brilliant to be amongst them,
mm.
just to see how they functioned.
Yeah,
amazing.
And lovely to see that. I mean, they know each other so well, mm-hmm. and I guess their relationships are very deep, and you get to eavesdrop on some of that.
Absolutely.
So your life now, I mean, you're doing a lot of punditry at the moment. Are you still enjoying it?
I love it. I feel very, very fortunate to be able to not only have played football and got into football as late as I did and play and get to the levels that I got to. And like I say, I'm talking about playing against some of the greats and ending up playing for my country, which was one of the greatest things in my whole life. But then to have the career I had and then be able to talk about it, you know what I mean? Not going to please people all the time, but I'm not there to please people. I just try to say what I see in the way I try to get that over to people. And it's something I absolutely love doing. I love watching football. I love watching England play. I love watching great players play. Mm. I love watching great games.
I remember probably a decade ago now, you kind of spoke publicly and made this. You had this sense that, well, producers and various people were saying, well, get Ian Wright on, he can crack the jokes.
Yes.
The court jester was the phrase you used. I mean, I can see why they did that, because you have this wonderful sense of humour, but you felt a little bit pigeonholed.
You know what it was? It wasn't even a case of pigeonholed. But after a while, you felt, I know I've got stuff to say. I know when I watch a game, I know I see things, and I know I've got, I want to try and point that out to people. But it just seemed at that particular time, that, you know, with the different pundits that you were on with, you almost seemed to be the last person they got to. So by the time they got to you, the punditry and what they wanted to talk about in respect of the analysis was kind of done.
Yeah.
So you're almost, I think one of the things you'll hear, one of the most frequent things you'll hear is when people are running out of things to say is, well, I agree with Alan, or I agree with David, or I agree with what he says, because they've exhausted the topic. And so then when you consider that, that's somebody who said that. So he's the second person to speak, and then you're the third person to speak. Yeah. So what are you going to say? I'm going to agree with him and him. So you're not giving the public or the punters anything, really. Mm. So it kind of almost went into a little bit of a jovial thing where, you know, you say something and it would be a crack of a joke, and then bam, you go to the next thing and that.
Yeah.
And so that's why at that particular time I felt like it was a token gesture for me to be there.
Mm.
And that's why I made the comments I made, and I stopped doing it. I stopped working for the BBC for about 9 years.
Because I think the BBC said, well, I don't know if they said it, but you may have got the sense, well, you're done here. You've had a go at our producers. You've had a go at us.
Mm-hmm.
You're out the door. And so you went off for 9 years, and you did BN, and you did various places. And yeah.
You know what I've done? I've done radio. Radio was amazing.
Okay.
And I loved it. And that's why and now I still do radio. I got my vibe and my juice and my flow back on radio. You know what I mean? It gave me my passion for the game back, because obviously watching it how I wasn't able to then, you know, kind of explain it and speak about it and talk about the forwards and the midfielders and what I would have done in this. Excuse me. I wasn't able to do that. So it was very frustrating. So once I got to do that on the radio, and then, you know, like I say, you mentioned being sports, went over and I'd done some stuff for them, and it was really nice to be able to talk, and then all of a sudden I got my vibe back, and through radio I got back into television, and I started to do ITV for the England games, and this is why people are confused that I do Match of the Day for the BBC and the England games for ITV, and it was ITV that were the ones, because obviously the BBC want me to do the tournaments and things when they come around, but ITV were the ones who put me back on television when no one else was going to put me on. Sky didn't want me on television simply because they thought I was a BBC face,
and
an ITV face. So when Sky wouldn't have me on, ITV, the boss who I upset at BBC went to ITV.
Right.
So he was running ITV. So obviously he didn't want me on there.
Right.
And then obviously the BBC, we already spoke about that. So
yeah.
Then what happened was is that the guy at ITV, they wanted to do a documentary on Laurie Cunningham, one of my great idols, black player from London. And they said, well, we can't do that show unless Ian Wright's doing that show. So I remember saying to them, I'll do it, but I'll only do it if you give me an FA Cup game, give me something, get me back on. And like Niall Sloan, who's obviously my dear, dear friend, you know, at the time he wasn't my friend, he hated me, in fact. He said, yeah, okay, do it. And then when I'd done it, you know, it was so good. And the thing is, what made it really good is that I was doing it with Martin Allen. It was crazy. So everything that Martin said, I went the other way and, you know what I mean, tried to speak about the football and what I saw, and everybody said it was great to see me back. And then that's how it happened. I was back on ITV and then inadvertently the BBC got
I didn't realise it was such a kind of fallow period where you were looking around saying, where am I going to be? I just had assumed you were working all the way through.
No.
And TV generally, so radio gives you your vibe back, and radio is such a lovely medium, as you know. You come in and you
personable.
Chat. It's personable.
Like you're talking to one person.
Yes, it's conversation. The
TV career, like, you know, Friday Night's All Right and all that stuff.
Yes.
I mean, I was watching some of it back over the last few days when I knew you were coming in, and he's some big names on.
Yeah.
You know, Will Smith is there comparing his shoe size to you, and Elton John, and
John
Denzel Washington, Mariah Carey was there.
Yeah.
So you look like you're loving it.
It wasn't a natural fit for me. Having a conversation with people of that ilk was like the dream come true stuff. It was amazing to be speaking to world stars and world superstars, but I wasn't comfortable doing what I had to do. I had to do a lot of research in respect of finding out about these people, speaking to these people, and make sure that you interview these people in a way that you can get something more than they normally do. And I just found all that, and some of the entourages that they'd come with, I found them very trying and very, it was, you know, diva, the diva behavior from some of the people was really frustrating.
Okay.
You know? But in the end, it wasn't my natural fit. My natural fit is football, that's what I know. And I was just doing that because I had a personality.
Yes.
And at the time, ITV and then BBC were trying to cash in on the fact that my personality was something that people liked in that particular forum. And they just blasted the shows at me. And as it was going, I stumbled into another contract and another one. And you know, obviously, I just finished playing. And it kind of helped me through the depression of not actually playing football because I didn't miss it at that time. And then I was doing all this television. And all of a sudden, I just didn't want to do it no more.
Right.
I didn't enjoy doing it. I didn't like it. I didn't like the fact that I, you know what I mean? I was sad. You're sad going out, then all of a sudden you have to put this massive big smile on and act like, ah. And then especially when you're, excuse me, you're recording the show. And this is what I like to do. I like doing live. When you're recording it, you have to do it again. Can we have more energy? Yeah, we need you to be more up.
Okay.
You know, another Red Bull, and you know what I mean, and stuff like that. And I was thinking, I just can't do this.
There was a fakery about it.
It wasn't what I was about. It was fakery.
So you sort of shut that down yourself, as opposed to they dropped you. Interesting. Because I'm sure your agents or people were saying, Ian, the money's pretty good. Let's keep doing it.
But to be honest, I ain't gonna lie to you. The money was good, but like I was getting into a situation where I didn't enjoy doing it, and I wasn't getting the best out of myself. So at some stage, it would have come to a situation where you just fall off to the point where people say, ah, he's gone, he's rubbish, it's no good no more. And they started to put you into shows where you kind of felt like you're being put in and around here and all stuff like that. I remember there was a time before, X Factor and that started. They wanted me to do that X Factor show. Because I remember they tested it out, I had to test it out on This Is Your Moment, a show called This Is Your Moment, way back. And it was that show where I thought to myself, I just couldn't do it anymore.
Ian, I don't know if you know this, but X Factor turned out to be a very big show.
It turned out to be very good.
That could have been a mistake.
Yeah, but the thing about it is that...
You wouldn't have been happy doing it.
I wouldn't have been happy doing it.
Okay.
And I'm not sure what role they would have had me doing. I wouldn't have wanted to do what Dermot done. You know, it was too big, it was massive, it was too much. And I wouldn't like...
Sorry to interrupt. Dermot's job, I mean, he's excellent at it, obviously. He's world class. But that would strike me as a perfect fit for you. If I was a producer, I'd say, let's give him a try, because his personality and the smile and the likability and everything.
You know what? It would have been the pressure of having to deliver on that show and, you know, reading the auto-cue and the stuff like that was something that I always used to feel very, very nervous about.
Did you?
Yeah,
You never strike me as a nervous type who feels that pressure.
Because... In the football world, there's nothing that frightens me. I'm very much at home in it. But in that world, where you have to make sure that you're hitting the right place on the stage and you're hitting the right, then you have to say the right things on the auto cue, and then you have to. It was just there was so much going on, and I'm a very instinctive. I'm instinctive. That's what my whole game, my life's about, instinct and feeling it. And I didn't feel it. It was too rehearsed, and it was something that I didn't enjoy doing.
Once you go past the age of 20, 21, the odds on you becoming a footballer are pretty much 2%. Maybe less. I don't know what the odds are, but pretty much. I've seen you talk about, so you were 21, 22, you're doing what you described as a demeaning job, like it was a powerful word to use about what work can do to you, you know? And you get maybe a sniff of a chance from Crystal Palace, you're still playing Sunday football, and almost said to Stevie Coppell and Crystal Palace, I've got to keep my job here. I'm not coming on trial.
Yeah, I turned them down 3 times. And the reason I've done that is because when I was 19, when I was unemployed, I couldn't even get a job. Through my Sunday team manager, I got a trial with Brighton. You know, it was really hard work to get there from Broccoli, South East London to Brighton, which was something like about a 100-mile trip, 100 miles, something like, to get down to where I was in southeast London to Brighton. So it's 200-mile round trip. And it was tough. Mm. And I've done it every day. I've done it every day for 6 weeks. And then towards the end there, you know what I mean? After scoring goals in the reserves for them and playing against the first team, and, you know, like I was 19, I'm thinking this is going to happen. This is happening for me. They said, well, no, we're sorry. We're not going to take you. It's funny because the guy that was on trial there was a guy called Stephen Penny. He came from Ireland. I can't remember the team he came from, but he was a right winger. He was lightning quick. You know, he was somebody that they got from Ireland, and he was the one. We kind of got there together. It's somebody that I always try to find out what he's doing, but I can't find out anything about Stephen Penny.
Someone will text him.
Somebody can text him.
And we will pass it on to the Cadbury people.
What happened to Stephen Penny?
Okay.
He was signed by Brighton in and around the time when they let me go. But he was a winger and I was a centre forward, but it's not like, oh, he took my place.
Yeah.
The fact is they let me go. And after that, the point I'm trying to make is that was me finished with professional football, thinking, well, if I could play at that level and do well against their first team at the time, and score goals in the reserves and everything, and still not make it, then obviously it's not going to happen for me. So what I had to do was I had to find a job. I had to get a good job because I had young, like Sean was maybe coming up to 2 or 3 years old and stuff like that.
Mm.
So it was time to be serious. So, you know what I mean? I've got odd jobs here and there. And then, you know, so the next couple of years, I just played Sunday morning football.
Mm.
Scoring lots of goals, but I'm scoring lots of goals in Sunday morning football, 3 and 4 goals a game some of the time. And it wasn't that it was boring, but it just felt very easy. So I didn't think that I was doing anything of any real quality.
Yes.
Because the players I was playing against, I thought they weren't very good. So all of a sudden I'm hearing that Palace are looking at me. So now I'm just turning 22. So, you know, everything's going well now, you know what I mean? The kids are getting older, you know, Bradley's born. And then Palace offered me the trial, and like I say, I turned them down 3 times on different occasions. But the third time I turned them down, I remember where I was working was a place called Tunnel Refineries in Greenwich. I remember me and the boss having that sliding doors moment where we never used to meet hardly in the canteen for lunch at any time.
Mm.
But this particular day, for some reason, I went in, he was in there, and we started talking, and then the chat just got on, because he knew I played football. Sunday football, and he said, so how's it going, everything? And I said, Palace have offered me that another the trial again. And he said, how many is that now? I said, well, that's the third time. He says, doesn't that strike you as a bit strange? That 3 times now, they've obviously seen something. They said, why don't you do it? And I said, I've been to those trials before. And the problem I had as well is that going back to the community when you failed on trials, because remember, I've been going to trials from the age of 10, 11.
Yeah.
Through the various different London clubs, all of them, Millwall, Charlton, Orient, you know, wrote to Chelsea, wrote to Palace, wrote to all of them, went to Palace, and they all rejected me. So everybody in the community thought that, well, it's just not good enough when it gets to a certain level. So it was one of those situations where I said to me, I've done the best I can do on a trial. I've trained the first teams and I've not got in. And, you know, I mean, I just don't want to waste my time. And the main thing was I was afraid of the rejection again. I didn't want to get that rejection. So I turned him down and he said, listen, why don't you just go? You know what I mean? He said, I'll give you the 2 weeks off. You know, obviously you don't get paid when you're not working. So I'll give you the 2 weeks off. I know you're a good worker because I was a hard worker.
Mm. And it was a tough job. It was a
tough job. Yeah, it was like a massive labouring job, really.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They tried to teach me plastering, but I was so bad at it.
Right.
They tried to teach me bricklaying. I was terrible. I was a manual labour man. I was like, I could carry her. You know what I mean? I'd mix the muck up. I'd carry the hod. They'd try to teach me stuff. I could fill in stuff, but then the plaster would come and finish it off.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So I'd do that kind of hard work for him where you just slap it on and then it'd come on and then he'd screed it in and do it properly, which was the kind of like, it was almost like the stuntman.
Yeah.
So they put me in as a stuntman. You do that bit and then he could.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, it was work that I was happy to do for the rest of my life if that was how it was going to pan out. But he said, I'll give you the chance. And so with that, knowing that I'm going to get my job back in 2 weeks, I just went and literally played football how I wanted to play it. Because when I went to Brighton, I was trying to lay the ball off and make sure you don't lose the ball. Make sure you do the right things because they're watching and they don't want you to lose. And so I was playing how they wanted. Maybe I perceived they wanted me to play. When I went to Palace, I didn't care.
Nothing to lose.
Absolutely nothing to lose. I was shooting from everywhere. I was taking people on, like it was Jim Cannon, Mickey Droy, the Palace first team. You know what I mean? I remember I played a game against Kingstonian. We beat them 1-0. I scored. Steve Copper came to watch. And after the game, he said to me, I want you to report for the behind closed doors game against Coventry. And that is basically it.
Wow. Sliding doors moment.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean,
it was, yeah.
You know, I was signed for 3 months on that Friday night. And then the rest was history. 1985, that's where it started.
I do not want to make you cry here. So do not bloody cry, because you cry too often. But, I mean, I think YouTube knows me better than I know myself. And every so often, the video of you and your former teacher, who I know sadly has passed away.
He passed last year.
Pops
27th of December.
Yeah, and every time.
Yes.
I'm like, God damn it, this video.
Yeah.
Like the importance of a mentor in your life.
I
hadn't fully realized until relatively recently, I kind of heard you be in, that you were like very angry in your teens. And
yes.
I hadn't fully understood just how tough your home life was. And. Mm-hmm. The importance of a teacher like that, because you're such, you know, happy and warm and all this stuff now. Like it was such a tough start.
Yes.
To give people a quick flavour, there's a story I read that I thought maybe that's not true or that's exaggerated. It involved Match of the Day and your stepdad.
Well, the story with Match of the Day and my stepdad was when we was younger. Football was everything to me and my brother Morris. He's like 18 months older than me. One of the things we look forward to more than anything else with my stepdad. It was Match of the Day. And so I remember, you know, sometimes we'd be able to watch it, but then sometimes, in the majority of the times, he would say, turn around, because we lived in the one room, me, my stepdad, and my mum and my brother. And he would say, turn around to the wall. So you can hear the music, but you'd have to turn around to the wall so you can hear everything that's going on, and, you know, you weren't allowed to watch it. It's something that even now, because I'm on Match of the Day every other week.
Yeah.
Every single time, the music starts with Match of the Day, I just get that feeling. I get that feeling because I don't know what it's like when you've got somebody who's a 8-9 year old, whose whole life is football, and Match of the Day comes on, which remember at a time it was
everything.
It was the
yeah.
Be all and
yeah,
end.
Yeah, yeah.
It was everything.
Yeah.
And you weren't allowed to watch it.
Why? Why, if you're
just
in the room?
Because,
just for the sake of cruelty?
Simply because that's all it was. And that's why I think that in the end, you know, I ended up adopting Sean, because I believe that, you know, if you're going to be a stepdad, you've got to do that properly. You know, he didn't do it properly. He was very cruel man. He's a big man. He's like 6'3", 6'4", very loud voice, big beard. You know, it was really strange because I'd done an interview with Alexander Lacazette, and I look at him and his face... He's out of my stepdad's face with his big beard and bald head. And he was a frightening man, you know, the kind of guy when he spoke, you shuddered. And so that happened. And then as you know, as time goes by, you know what I mean? You know, my brother, so I had two older brothers in there, which was very tough because I didn't have no real way of, like my out when I was angry, and,
yes.
You know, to be able to vent that anger, you know,
which must have been huge.
It was always like that because I had a step that I couldn't do nothing about. Two older brothers that could just get you on the floor and hold you down and just you had to submit. And then I had a sister, my stepsister. Well, she's my sister, and she was his daughter. That she was the one who would get me into so much trouble on a daily basis. So I'd frustrated with her as well. So when I'd go out. You know, the first thing that would happen in respect of anything that was untoward towards me, in respect of that would get my back up, bam, you're in a fight. I used to fight so much. But at one stage, people thought I was going to box because they wanted me to go in there so I could vent out the frustration. And I think that even when you look at my football career, there's certain incidents and things that I'd done, which was just purely out of anger and red mist. It's something that... It was very hard to contain all the way through my life, but I'd have to say with my teacher, which
yes,
I don't want to digress,
yes.
He was the first real male figure in my life that showed me any kind of love and care. He just cared for me. And I remember the first time I ever met him, I was outside the classroom because I'd been put outside again because I didn't have anything wrong with me. I was just slow on the uptake in respects of the classroom and the lessons and grasping what was going on. And I used to always find it a lot harder, instead of asking, which I say to kids now, just ask. We're in a different time now.
Sure, yeah.
you know, just ask. I didn't ask, and then I'd get disruptive, and I'd be put outside the classroom. And then he saw me. He saw me outside the classroom. And he saw me, this is about the third, fourth time he'd seen me outside the classroom. He went in, spoke to the teacher. And then from that day, he brought me with him. And he taught me, literally, because I was really struggling with the reading and the writing at that time. And he gave me that one-on-one tuition and stuff like that. Then once he saw I could play football as well, he started telling me about Jimmy Greaves and how to finish. You know, this is why the goals I score, there's some goals I score, and I remember running back to the halfway line. In early doors, he used to watch me a lot. He watched me a couple of times at Arsenal.
Yeah.
And early doors, you know what I mean? I used to always like it had to go in the side netting.
Okay.
You know, you had to give the goalkeeper no chance.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are the things that I remember him saying to me when I was like 8. Because I remember I used to get as close as I could to the goalkeeper, and I literally tried to blast a hole through the goalkeeper to get it in the goal. And that's when he mentioned to me Jimmy Greaves. And Jimmy Greaves passes it into the net.
Yeah.
The goalkeeper can't even move sometimes. He doesn't even touch the back of the net.
Mm.
You know, it's not about blasting it. It's about finishing it with a bit of alacrity, a bit of beauty,
and
something that's nice.
Do you think he just spotted you and maybe could see the pain you were in that you didn't even realise you were in and honestly, thought, I got to help this guy?
It's only when I got older I realised that when I found out about his life and everything that he wanted, all he wanted to do ever was teach. You know, I remember when I played for England and I gave him my England shirt. I remember when he played for, I found out that he was one of the pilots that done the flyby over Buckingham Palace. I think there was 18 pilots, and he was one of the pilots chosen to fly over after the World War when we won it.
Yeah.
And he said he was prouder of me playing for England than him doing his flyby. He was somebody, honestly, I can't explain to people what he means to me and why it's important that these teachers, who all they want to do is teach, just like all I wanted to do is play football, all he wanted to do was teach and make people better. And that's what he done. Mm. He made my life. He made me a better person. If it was, I don't know if, you know, again, I've had another sliding door moment in my life with being outside the classroom at that particular time for that occasion, for him to take me, turn me into a milk monitor, register monitor. He gave me responsibility.
Mm.
You know, it was somebody that when I needed him in my life as a real role model man figure, he was there and some.
I haven't even got to talk to you about football, and yet our time is brief, so we'll finish on that note, and we're talking about England and Arsenal and how it all turned out after that another time. But Ian Wright, enjoy your day with Cadbury's and the fans today, and thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.